Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When it comes to music, we are in the age of abundance. It is everywhere. How to sort the ocean and find what you like? Well, you could try Pandora. It's an online music site that has x-rayed mountains of music. Tell it what you like, it will stream you a whole lot more in that vein, and maybe some surprises. This hour on Point, Pandora, the age of abundance and the future of music online. You can join the conversation. Where do you go to try to hear music online? Is it changing the way you listen, what you listen to, your relationship with music? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from San Francisco is Tim Westergren. He's founder of Pandora, which he started back in the year 2000. He's also a composer, musician, and one-time record producer. He's played in bands, worked as a film score composer. Now he's chief strategy officer of a company and a web effort with a big idea. Tim Westergren, welcome. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's my pleasure.
I guess we're having this conversation because I stumbled on Pandora and really got into it. I've got it on all the time now. You guys are kind of taking over my musical life, or at least a chunk of it. Explain, if you would, what it does and how.
Sure. So it's a fairly simple experience as a user. You go to the website, type in a favorite song, artist, or composer, and hit go. And Pandora immediately launches a radio station based on the sort of musicological characteristics of that starting point. So it instantly creates a personalized radio stream. And you can sit back and listen to it and sort of enjoy a exploration around your favorite musical neighborhood. And you can also refine the stations as you listen by thumbing up and down songs and effectively curating your listening experience.
We'll talk about how that works, and also you use the phrase radio stream. That raises all kinds of questions, but let's give it a little run first, a little test drive. Here, my producer, Hillary, has jumped in here in advance of the show, and she punched in a song by Elizabeth Mitchell called You Are My Sunshine. Let's just listen to this as a starting point and what Pandora might do with it.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray.
Okay, may or may not be your particular taste, but Elizabeth Mitchell's there. She's kind of a children's artist, but with a folk sound adults might like as well. What will Pandora see in this song that it would begin to cue off of, Tim, to find other music that might be similar that someone who enjoyed this might enjoy?
Sure, so obviously a fairly straightforward instrumentation, acoustic guitar. It sounds like there might be two acoustic guitars in there working together, and a vocalist, sort of an alto, nice sort of gentle, breathy vocal, sort of gentle vocal delivery. So we're looking for something that sort of has that general instrumentation and also has a sort of a mild reggae feel to it, which is sort of this upstroke on the guitar, kind of the emphasis being on the offbeats, so you might pull in music that has a little bit of that in it too.
Let's listen to one that Pandora pulls up off of You Are My Sunshine and Elizabeth Mitchell. It points us to, brings up Israel, what Kama Kawiole with What a Wonderful World. Okay, we recognize this. A Pandora user would not have to ask for this. This would just be served up as something in the vein of the first song we heard that you might like. And the connections here would be, Tim?
Yeah, so there are some that are pretty clear, obviously. Here, it's not a guitar, it's a ukulele, sounds like, but acoustic stringed instrument. Again, I think emphasizing more that upstroke, that chick, a sort of more reggae feel. So it's pulling on that. And you've got a very similar vocal delivery, you know, a similar vocal range and vocal timbre. It's a male vocalist. but clearly some similarities there. And I think, you know, both tunes have a real emphasis on melody. So if you step back and kind of thought what is this song about, certainly melody is an important piece of it. So, you know, very much in the same vein.
And just to keep the idea going, Pandora would keep right on going and jump to another and another and another in that vein. Here's another from the Be Good Tanya's The Littlest Bird.
Well, I feel like an old hobo on sad, lonesome and blue. I was fair as a summer day. Now the summer days are through. You pass through places and places pass through you, but you carry them with you on the soles of your traveling shoes.
So there it is. In a nutshell, you get the idea. Punch in something you like, and off Pandora goes to bring you others that you might like. We'll look more closely at many aspects of this, exactly how that's done, what this means for music, music recommendations, the socializing around music, and all the rest. Let's get our listeners in here right away. Richard in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi there. First of all, let me just say I'm an enormous fan of Pandora. I've been using it for a few months now. Such a great thing, especially, you know, there's so much competition in this realm on the web. It's nice to have something that really stands out in a unique way like that.
How do you use it then, Richard? Give us a sense of it. When you put it on, how do you begin to use it? You think, what am I in the mood for? I'll punch in something I know and trust it to bring you more like that?
Well, I started off with a few singers and songs I particularly liked, and I made a few little Pandora stations. I'm sure you've talked about the little radio stations where it kind of keeps it to one general group of characteristics you prefer.
We haven't even come to that yet, but that's the nomenclature they use. You punch in something you like, a song or an artist, that's called a station here, and it brings you more and more. So you'll say, I'm in the mood for, what's a station you've got, Richard, for example?
Well, I started off with, I have sort of an unusual taste. I wanted to get a whole lot of Brazilian music of a certain flavor.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have one that's more cool. I call it Brazilian cooler jazzier. And a second one I made called Brazilian Melancholic, depending on my mood, of course.
And how did you start those? With a particular song that fit that profile?
That's right. And then it quickly found all sorts of things, that some of which I had heard and many of which I never had, and which are just truly fabulous. You know, I'm so glad to learn about.
So it's educating you in that vein of music. It's giving you what you're in the mood for. And I think I heard you begin to say you'd like to talk about how it may evolve. What are you thinking?
Well, what I'm concerned about is, you know, the long-term future of any such enterprise as this. I know you all started off with a nice chunk of venture capital money, and I'm wondering what we can do, the fans of Pandora, to help it keep going. I would imagine something like encouraging friends to get paid accounts. Would that be right?
There's a perpetual question, and let me just say, Tim Westergren, I'm looking here, this is, a year ago, August, you know, giant of internet radio, as you call it, nears its last stand. Pandora, other webcasters struggle under high song fees. I mean, you were seen as facing your last stand. Where are you now financially, and what's it take to make it work?
Yeah, we've certainly have had a few brushes with death as a company.
Yes.
Over the years. Fortunately, I'm very happy to say that we're actually on a good path now. We had a real close call over the last couple of years trying to resolve an issue around the royalties that we pay. We've managed to renegotiate that and reach a more sustainable level. So the company's actually quite healthy. We're just about to get profitable here, and so the future's looking good. It's been a lot of heavy lifting, but we're on a good path now.
Help us understand. You pay royalties on every song you play just like an old-fashioned radio station would?
Yeah, so we actually pay two royalties for every song that we stream. One's called a publishing fee, which goes to the composer of the tune. And the second one is called a performance fee, which actually goes to the performers. And the publishing fee is paid the same for all forms of radio, you know, so AM, FM radio, mm-hmm. Sirius radio, satellite and cable radio. And internet. The performance fee, though, is actually quite different. We pay a very substantial percentage of our revenue towards performance fees. Satellite radio pays a significantly smaller percent, and broadcast radio actually pays no performance fee.
So I hear you lobbying for something lower there, but I can't go on Pandora and ask for a specific song or just one artist, and I thought that was to protect you from paying some kinds of fees. Is that wrong?
That's essentially true. The the company operates under a centralized statutory license for what's called webcasting, which is, you know, internet radio. And in order to be eligible for that license, there are a whole bunch of things that we're not allowed to do in order to remain radio-like. And one of those is you can't hear a song on demand on Pandora.
It can't be a jukebox, or else you'd have to pay even more.
Precisely.
Is this, you keep calling it radio, I mean, it's online. Is this the future of radio? Is this radio at all?
That's funny. You know, we wrestle so much with the terminology. In the early going, we were trying to figure out what should we call it. And radio, I think, is a really convenient shortcut for us. And I think where we wound up is saying, look, radio is what people know. We're going to try and sort of reinvent it.
Radio is certainly more familiar than the Music Genome Project, but we'll talk about that as well. It's great to have you with us. Tim Westergren is founder of Pandora. It is one of a new genre of music services online. This one, put in something you like. It'll feed you a whole lot more. Maybe you found it. Maybe you will. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think? Has online music changed the way you listen and what you want to hear? Do you expect more from online music providers? Do you want them to help figure out what you'll enjoy or not? Behind us are right here. Another song that comes up on Pandora off that very first one we heard, You Are My Sunshine. Stick with it long enough, you'll get to Jack Johnson's Upside Down. You can join us, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We'll be back with a lot more. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll sing and dance to Mother Nature's song. This world keeps spinning and there's no time to waste. Well, it all keeps spinning, spinning round and round and upside down. Who's to say what's impossible and can't be found? I don't want this feeling to go. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the future of music online, and in particular a service called Pandora that thinks it knows what you'll want to hear. Maybe you've used it, maybe you haven't. It's interesting. Maybe a glimpse of the future. Tim Westergren is with us from San Francisco today. He's the founder of Pandora, composer, musician, been around music for a long time. Now he's got a service that helps you, learn about perhaps music, like music you like. And let's just take another example, if we can, Tim. Here's from Owl City. This is the number one Billboard Hot 100 hit for the week of 11/21, the week we're in. It's from Owl City. It's called Fireflies. You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world as I fell asleep. 'Cause they fill the open air and leave teardrops everywhere. You'd think me rude, but I would just stand and stare. Okay, so we've plugged in Fireflies on Pandora from Owl City, number one this week. And let's see what comes up as recommended alongside it. Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. And there's Journey from Don't Stop Believing. Now, I'm a little surprised by that, but how does it make that jump? But describe how that might have happened in your software program, Tim.
That's a head-scratcher, I've got to tell you. You know, if you get to the chorus of Owl City, it gets pretty anthemic, and you have some strings rolling in, and that singer actually does have a pretty similar vocal sound and gets up there, and there are some similarities, though. I wouldn't say kind of musicologically this is right on target, and that does happen occasionally.
Okay, let's try another one. Down with Journey. Let's see what comes up next on Pandora here. So off with Journey. This is coming up next. You'll hear the Hello, Goodbye, and All Your Love. Okay, so we go from Owl City to Journey to Hello, Goodbye, and All Your Love. A little Pandora Trail there. Let's get a call from Idaho Falls, Idaho. Jesse, do you use it? What do you think of it? What do you hear, Jesse?
Hi. I've been listening to Pandora for several years. And when I first started listening to it, you could plug in any artist you wanted to, generally somebody you'd heard on the radio, and you would get a whole lot of music that you've never heard before, things that you weren't going to hear on commercial radio.
Did you like that?
Yeah, it was really great because you were introduced to new music.
Okay.
But now it feels like no matter what you plug in, all you get is more music that you would hear on the radio every day. So I was wondering if the music available on Pandora had changed or if that just seems to be what's happening now.
We got the founder himself right here to explain. Mm-hmm. What do you say to Jesse's observation from Idaho Falls, Tim?
Well, I'm disappointed to hear it for sure. And you know, clearly, one of our missions as a company is to help people discover music. And if you look at our catalog, about 70% of our music is coming from artists who are independent, so really lesser-known music. And I think that depends a little bit on where you start your listening experience. And the interesting challenge for us is some listeners want more variety, some want less. And our challenge is to figure that out listener by listener. But it's certainly our intention to keep discovery as a cornerstone of the experience. So,
Do you have a financial interest in playing more current popular music somehow?
No, not at all. The only way we make connections is through the musicology, through the Music Genome Project that you mentioned. And so the choices we make are purely based on the intrinsic musical qualities.
We'll talk about the Music Genome Project a little more, but let's go to Jesse in Idaho. Thanks for your call. Bill in Nashville, Tennessee. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. What do you know, Bill?
I don't really have a question as much as a compliment to him. I love this station. I love the Pandora. I'm a truck driver. I can stream it into my iPhone. I listen to a lot of Christian radio stations and other Christian music, and I just love it. Great job.
And how's it compare to a radio station experience, to a traditional radio station experience for you, Bill?
Well, traveling on the road, going to the Midwest, back to Florida, you lose stations every 20 miles and you're searching for a new station. The XM, I've tried that. It's okay. It doesn't quite have the variety that Pandora has. Just been very intelligent thing he did here. I love it.
There you go. Thumbs up from truck driver Bill on the road in Nashville. Bill, thanks very much for your call. Let me get one more right here from Tim in Douglas, Massachusetts. Tim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom and Tim. I'm a big fan of Pandora and have been for a long time. I have a bunch of stations, one of which is Big Boss Man, based on the old blues song that the Grateful Dead did back in the 60s. From that, you sort of addressed kind of what my question was going to be with the Journey example, but from that, I've listened to lots of cool stuff from 60s psychedelia that I've never heard of before to it's morphed into Johnny Guitar Watson, both old and his later stuff, to Parliament Funkadelic. And I think it's really cool because they don't spend the whole afternoon listening to one kind of music. So thanks for your efforts. And you've sort of answered my question with that Journey example, as I said. But I'd like to know more about kind of why it morphs like that.
How it morphs, how it moves from selection to selection. We will look at that, Tim. And along the same or related line, here's a Twitter at On Point Radio from Adam. He says, I love Pandora and listen 40-plus hours a month, so I pay for it. We'll talk about that, too. He says, I have one issue, not enough variety. Let's talk about it. Tim, how much music is in the can here, and what's the overall volume? And then how does it decide? Maybe you can take us further into the Genome Project about how it decides how to move from selection to selection.
Sure. Maybe I'll start with a genome and then get to the catalog.
Mm-hmm.
So Pandora sits on top of this enormous musical taxonomy, this big sort of system that we have used to organize music. And we have a team of musicians. There are about 35 of them now, and that team has been as large as 60, that for the last 10 years have been listening to songs, one song at a time, and analyzing each song along close to 400 musical attributes.
And that makes up this kind of language of music or taxonomy that you'd refer to.
Right, it's like musical DNA. So it's all the details of melody and harmony and rhythm and instrumentation and vocal performance, etc., that sort of collectively give a song its sound. So when you type a song into Pandora, what we actually do is we look at that song's fingerprint represented by a bunch of numbers and compute proximity with other songs, essentially sort of a musicological proximity, and then sequence a set of songs. And then as you thumb up or down songs and you're listening to them, we map that feedback back onto this template. The idea being that this would sort of replicate an experience of, you know, sharing your musical taste with your that friend of yours who's the musical guru, who the more they know about what you like and don't like, the better they get at recommending music to you.
Give us some of the more out there, nuanced attributes in your taxonomy that might be, you know, tagged on a particular piece of music.
So we do everything from, you know, how much vibrato does a lead vocalist use to what is the kick drum pattern, and how much use of chromatic harmony in a tune. Virtually every detail you can imagine is captured in this musical analysis. And we do about 10,000 new songs a month, and the total catalog is a little north of 700,000 songs.
So you heard Adam tweeting that he wants more variety, and I've ended up using this a lot. I've got a whole bunch of stations here, but some of them I notice are so specific that they do repeat.
One of the level of repetition depends a little bit on what part of the musical neighborhood you're in. And so if you're in an area that's not as densely populated with songs, so a very sort of niche or unusual genre, you might get a little bit more repetition. But it's something we wrestle with constantly, you know, how much repetition is the right amount.
But presumably the more volume of music you get in there, the more ultimately variety I would get off any particular angle.
That's generally true, yeah.
Let's get a call right here from Chicago, Illinois, and Nick. Nick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was just had a question about the algorithm sort of behind Pandora. Is whether or not it's deterministic, does it always come up with the same results if you plug in the same music? And then also you mentioned how you have people listening to all the songs and manually tagging them. Is there plans to automate that with maybe a computer, an algorithm that does sort of a frequency analysis or something like that?
That's interesting. There are a number of outfits that do similar things, Slacker and iMeme and Flycast and iTunes Genius and Last.fm. Do you all do it the same way? And what about, you know, computers doing this, or what about listeners doing it with you or for you, Tim?
Yeah, there are all sorts of methodologies. There are those that are purely using digital signal processing, as the caller is alluding to, you know, computers analyzing sound waves. There are systems that use what's called collaborative filtering, which is just matching one listener's taste to another, the same way, you know, Amazon recommends a book. And then we, I think, are the only company that have taken this approach, which is kind of a nutty approach, really, if you think about it. You know, it's taken us a decade to put together a large enough collection to offer the station. And the reason that we took this approach really goes back to the kind of founding principle behind the company, which was to help, you know, bands that people didn't know about find an audience. And so we needed to build a system that was not based on popularity, that really could recommend music solely based on its sound and be sort of a level playing field for everybody. And we felt this was the best way to do it. And in terms of sort of computer analysis, computers, believe it or not, are not nearly as powerful and sophisticated as the human ear, so it wouldn't be able to extract this kind of information.
Let's get another example here. You punch in Ella Fitzgerald. I Get a Kick Out of You comes up. We'll hear that and see where Pandora would take us from there.
My story is much too sad to be told, but practically everything leaves me totally cold.
Ella Fitzgerald. It goes to I Get a Kick Out of You. We know that, you know, it's going to be there in a jiffy. Let's listen to where it takes us on its next jump then. You say, okay, that's what we start with. Where do we go from there? And it brings up, we'll listen right here, Billie Holiday, Crazy He Calls Me.
I say I'll move the mountains, and I'll move the mountains, if he wants them out of the way. Crazy calls me.
And you're doing that Pandora thing. Tim Westergren joins us from San Francisco. He's the founder of Pandora. We're joined right now from Montreal in Canada by Daniel Levitin, professor of music and psychology at McGill University, author of The World in Six Songs, How the Musical Brain Created Human Nature, and This Is Your Brain on Music, The Science of a Human Obsession. Daniel Levitin, welcome back to One Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tim.
So you've thought a lot about music and how our interactions with it are changing. What do you make of Pandora and its ilk these days, and where it's taking us in our relationship with music, Daniel?
Well, to begin with, I think that this is the future of music listening and of music discovery. And that's because of the sheer number of songs that are out there now. Millions and millions of songs. And the number of songs that are coming into the pot is increasing exponentially. Any musician with a laptop now can make a recording that is technically as good as most recordings made in the 60s. And the distribution of music is now virtually free. You don't need to create some petroleum product that gets shipped to a store by some petroleum-driven truck. And the big challenge in the coming decade, I think, is going to be how to find the music that you like.
Let's take Billy down and see what comes next from Pandora. In the top 10 after Ella, we get Nancy Wilson, The More I See You.
The more I see you, the more I want you.
Different sound, of course. Ella's got a big range herself. Do you think we're going to be, broader-minded connoisseurs of music with a service like this at people's disposal, Daniel? Less top 10, more full range of what's available out there?
Well, I think there's pluses and minuses. So on the plus side, I think when the system really works, it can help us to find music that we wouldn't find on our own. As Tim says, lesser-known bands, now we can create a level playing field where somebody doesn't need a record deal or a major label behind them in order to have their music heard. Mm-hmm. I think the potential downside is that, take the example of the Ella Channel that we're hearing now. It might be that you don't want to hear music that sounds like Ella, but music that makes you feel like Ella makes you feel. Now, when you put on that first Ella song, yeah, I felt uplifted, as I often do with Ella.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Billie Holiday came on, I got to tell you, Billie's kind of a downer.
Yep.
There are musicological similarities, but the emotional content is very different for me anyway.
So maybe there's another wave or angle of emotional profiling that might take you in a completely different direction, maybe not even in the same era, Daniel.
Yeah, I think the next step to make the most of all of this is that we need to understand more about how and why music moves us and how particular musicians are accomplishing that. As I say, here's another example. There's an album by the Smithereens that I love called Blow Up. I can't get enough of that album. And I've bought every other Smithereens album ever made to try to recapture that feeling. You think, well, if I like the Smithereens, I like the Smithereens. That should stand to reason.
Right.
But I don't like the other Smithereens records. That one album gives it to me, and yet the other Smithereens records, in many respects, sound like that Smithereens record I like so much.
In the old days, a friend might have helped you find something different. In the future, it may be a service online, maybe like Pandora. Daniel Levitin, it's great to have you with us. Please stand by in Montreal. And Tim Westergren, founder of Pandora in San Francisco. We'll go out with Reliant K, Be My Escape, another recommendation off of Owl City's Fireflies. Listeners, you can join us. What do you make of this new vein of music service? Is it for you? Are you into it already? 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
And insecurity, and I've been locked inside that house. All the while you hold the key, and I've been dying to get out. That might be the death of me, and even though there's no way of knowing where to go, I promise I'm going, because I gotta get out of here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the future of music online, in particular this hour, a service called Pandora that thinks it knows what you'll want to hear and puts a lot of effort into bringing you a stream of things you may know, you may not know, but that are like music that you like. Tim Westergren is with us. He's founder of Pandora, now chief strategy officer there, a musician himself who's bringing it into this online era. Daniel Levitin's with us from McGill University. He's author of The World in Six Songs, This Is Your Brain on Music, a neuroscientist who's paid a lot of attention to the way we interact with music. Here's a song you may recognize. I certainly do. And let's play it, and we'll see what Pandora would do with it. It's our theme song. Okay, On Point's theme song, the top of every single show, but we didn't just make it up for the show. It's by a group called Four, or it's from Fortet. We plugged our song into Pandora, and let's listen to what it came up with. The first first here, Boards of Canada, Chromakey Dream Coat. Okay, off our theme, Everything Is All Right, from Fortet to Boards of Canada, Chromakey Dream Coat, and let's keep right on looking. That was the number one. Down at number eight, DG EGADS in My First Song Here. I'm still feeling that. Maybe that'll be our theme song on another day. Tim, that was fun for us to do. Of course, listeners have their own versions right across the board. You heard Daniel wondering before the break about emotion, not just structure, but emotion in a song that might make quite long leaps. Can you imagine that? Is it possible? Are you working on it?
You know, it's a really interesting issue, and one that I think is outside of the musicological realm. I mean, there's something very ephemeral and magical about music that's hard to put your finger on. And in fact, when we were architecting the genome, we actually tried to capture that. We had a whole set of attributes that were really directed at capturing emotion and mood and so on. And the problem is that it's an incredibly subjective measurement. So you can think you have a nice, tidy way of cataloging and categorizing emotion, but you put 10 people around a table and ask them to score a song along those measurements, and you're all over the map. So it didn't work for us. And I think that what that means really is we're addressing a particular part or a particular set of dimensions of musical taste, and there's some we don't capture. And you know what? I'm kind of glad about that.
Is there a way, Daniel Levitin, do you think, to do that, or is an emotional response to music so singular, so personal, so unique to each individual that you could never capture a common experience there, or not?
Well, I take Tim's point. I mean, he and his team are really smart, and they're doing a really good job. We've tried in my lab to do just this, and we found there is a great deal of individual difference. What one person finds happy, another person finds depressing. What one person finds inspiring and uplifting, another person finds flat. So I don't know that it's impossible to get at. I just think that, you know, I'm commenting that this is something that seems to be a factor that a lot of people are looking for in music recommendations. When you're talking to a friend and the friend says, oh, well, that I love this piece of music because it helps get me through my exercise workout.
Right.
Find me something like that.
Right, right. Let's get a call from Brian in Austin, Texas. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. My question was kind of around the balance of how obscure the music was. And first of all, this is coming, you know, from a place. I'm a big fan. So just a kind of a question about where the product could go. Really, sometimes I really like to listen to Pandora and have it, you know, introduce me to new stuff. And then sometimes, say, for instance, if I'm having a party, I might want to dial down how obscure the music would get.
So your guests don't look at you and say, Brian, what the heck are you playing here?
Kind of. People like to listen to music at parties that they know. So, but when I'm by myself, I might want to dial up the obscure meter.
Interesting.
So I was wondering if there might be some way the user could have control over that.
There's another sort of range of desires. How about it, Tim?
It's funny, you know, in general on Pandora, when we think about the interface, we're very allergic to knobs and dials. But there's one of them that keeps rearing its head, and it's a dial that would sort of be the from obscure to mainstream, or, you know, well-known to unknown, that I think may someday find its way onto the website.
So it may be coming for you, Brian. Party next year, maybe sometime. But when you're on your own, maybe a different crowd at that party, Obscure, can sure be great. Let's go to Chuck in Boston. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question actually is partially a comment just to follow up the conversation talking about understanding the emotions of the Pandora listeners. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to using Pandora for years. And one thing that I've you know always wondered is if eventually if the manpower on the Pandora end of things might be strong enough and capable to open it up to more of a consumer-generated experience. And what I mean by that is, you know, it seems like on the Pandora end, one of the biggest tools is just understanding when people skip ahead a song. If they say, I don't like this one that Pandora is presenting to me, I'm going to skip ahead one.
Yeah.
But instead of that, if Pandora, instead of using a special sauce, like a magic sauce, actually displayed some of the attributes that are tying some of the songs together so the listener could understand more about their own preferences, but also maybe add in their own preferences and attach their own attributes to music so that for the people who might find Ella Fitzgerald uplifting versus the people who might find it a little bit of like a downer or some other emotional response to it, you could start building together like-minded communities of listeners.
You're ready to roll your sleeves up and get right into the attribute list and sort of tweak them to your taste. How about it, Tim Westergren?
Well, you know, again, like a really interesting notion that you could kind of take this whole system and flip it upside down and allow a listener to sort of grab hold of the reins of the genome and guide the playlists in a more granular way. I think that's a really fascinating thought. It's a real challenge from a user interface perspective and sort of usability perspective. But I think that, you know, I can certainly imagine a time when that would be possible. And again, I think, you know, what we're endeavoring to do is to get at that without requiring someone to actually explicitly tell us. So by looking at their listening habits, what they thumb up and thumb down and skip and how they create stations, to sort of be able to glean that kind of information. But more explicit controls would be, you know, very interesting.
Daniel Levitin, give us a big step back here for a moment. I mean, it's kind of amazing, you know, the way human beings are. As soon as we get some new capacity, we want to tweak it and we want to tune it. We want it more and more and more tailored. But if you look back just a couple, three decades, I mean, there was nothing like this as an option. Not the abundance, not the way to tailor. There was the tyranny of, you know, sort of top 40 radio stations, whatever else you could find, and the physical tyranny of having to, you know, juggle CDs or, heaven forfend, you know, big vinyl records or oodles of tape and trying to put together just the playlist that you wanted. I mean, this is quite an incredible step we're looking at here.
Well, you're absolutely right. This is an interesting insight, Tom. You go back 100 years, and our great-grandparents would have heard less music in their lifetime than the average teenager is going to hear in a couple of months. I mean, think about that.
It would be only at the bandstand or when Uncle Willie came with his banjo. Mm-hmm.
Right, and you'd hear the same songs over and over again. And if you wanted to hear music 100 years ago, you had to grab a musician to play it for you. You know, the explosion of the amount of music and the choice we have, I think, is a good thing. We really are in the golden age of music, where consumers, listeners, can find music that they really, really like, not just music they sort of like.
But you're the neuroscientist. I mean, what does that mean in terms of human emotional profile? I mean, I suppose at one time it would be emperors or kings who could order up any musician to come and play exactly what they wanted nonstop or, you know, off with their heads. Now, anybody can do it. Is it entirely healthy? I can sit there in a blue mood and have Pandora just, you know, marinate me in blue music. Is that a good thing, Daniel?
Well, I think it is. If you want to go back to the neurobiology of it, we are a musical species. Music has been with us from the dawn of human evolution. The oldest artifacts you find in human burial sites are musical instruments. We even find them in Neanderthal sites. And there's every evidence that humans have been using music kind of as medication for tens of thousands of years to regulate our moods. So having better control over that, I think, is a good thing. And I think that the wave of the future is to allow us to get down into the details of just how we do that.
This is really a new realm, the realm of
Tom,
emperors.
Yes, Tom, Tim. We found a new tagline, I think. It's Pandora, come marinate.
Come marinate. Dive in, soak all night. Doug in Proctorsville, Vermont. Okay, Doug in Vermont, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How's it going, Tom?
Good. What do you know?
I just, I love Pandora. We listen to it all day long at work. And just, I guess, a question about possibly clicking a button or I know Tim said he doesn't like those, but to censor the music. Because sometimes our boss just says, turn it off. You can't listen to that because it's, you know.
Why?
The choice of music is too many for the retail environment. You know, the whole store hears our music.
Oh, but I mean if you get into some raw hip-hop or something?
Exactly, for example.
So like a bleep button. Tim, what do you say?
There actually is an explicit filter on Pandora. You can do it in your account settings where you can remove all profanity.
Oh, check it out. Doug, look down in the controls. Maybe you've got the way to do it. At Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Hey, Tim. How you doing? I'm a musician, and I was actually at South by Southwest involved slightly in a panel listening to you guys talk about Pandora back this March. And what was really encouraging for me, I actually got to play the bumper music in between some online streaming talks at South by Southwest. And what was really encouraging for me as an independent artist, as you know, Pandora helps people find new artists, what's really exciting is new artists like us who are independent, who are doing basically everything ourselves, kind of, is not only happy that people can find us on iTunes or because of a Pandora thumbs up or a link, but encouraging us to sort of leverage that exposure in a creative way. And something I decided to do was also not only have stuff on iTunes and available, but also create my own subscription service for my music for my fans who, you know, people who casual listeners may not want to go, but people who, after many listenings on Pandora or something like that, we'll go, I want to see what this guy does. And so it sort of encouraged me to think outside the box as well.
So as a musician, it's channeling people to you, Jeff, and I who might not get there otherwise. I can see how that might work. And I've got another musician right here. Thank you, Jeff, in Nashville. Jay in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Jay, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Well, what do you know?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also a musician. I'm in a band called Barefoot Truth, you know, another independent band where, you know, we're in a position where, you know, we're not a lot of people are able to just come across our music without, you know, these kind of online things. We've basically created an avenue for us to have a career.
Because people find you on Pandora and then what, buy you on iTunes or something?
Exactly. That's we found that's very much our biggest channel is people finding us on Pandora and, you know, listening to us and then going on and buying us on iTunes or going to our shows and, you know, cities where we normally wouldn't have known anybody or had anybody coming out. And from what I understand, one of our songs called Roll If You Fall has actually had up to near 3 million spins or something like that. So it's just been an unbelievable, you know, tool for us.
Pretty good. There's some Barefoot Truth right there. Jay, thanks for your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tim Westergren, maybe you're not just opening up new options to people. You're making it possible for some musicians to find a market there.
Well, I can't tell you how much it means to me to hear someone call in and say that, you know, Pandora's making a difference in their musical career. I used to be in bands myself. I was just like him with this band, Barefoot Truth. We were living out of a van and traveling around the country and trying to scrape by. And I've long believed that there's a layer of musicians, and it's many thousands of musicians that ought to be able to make a living at what they do. And the only thing that they lack is a way to, you know, for people to find them. And I am beginning to believe that we're going to help sort of catalyze the creation of a musician's middle class, that there will be this new layer of artists that will make a living because they finally have access to mass promotion.
That would be cool. Let's take it for one more spin here. Here's three guys who really don't probably don't need your help, but we'll listen to what Pandora does. Bruce Springsteen, Plug In, 4th of July, Asbury Park.
Sandy, the fireworks are hailing over Little Eden tonight.
Everybody knows him. Most everybody's heard that. What does it offer next in line? George Harrison, Pisces Fish.
Canadian geese crab along the bank.
Pandora keeps rolling. What comes up next? Tom Waits, Jersey Girl.
No time for the corner boys.
down in the street making all that noise.
And pretty soon we're on a whole new wavelength here. Tim, how do you make money?
We're advertising supported, and you know we're on our way to being profitable. I want to comment on this last run of songs. I think it's kind of interesting that one of the ways in which we sequence songs is we actually pick out certain musical elements and emphasize them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way of kind of saying, hey, maybe you like The Boss because you like the sound of the accordion or the sound of his voice. And in fact, that George Harrison track has heavy uses of accordion, just like Asbury Park does.
Mm.
And you got Tom Waits, whose vocal performance is a lot more like Bruce Springsteen. And so it's kind of trying to test you and kind of probe around and get at your musical taste.
Daniel Levitin, in Montreal, it's been great to have you. Final thought, we are in some kind of new age here, sir, are we not?
I think we are. I think that this is all a good thing. The Greeks used to say that the measure of a culture is, one measure of the sophistication of a culture is how many people enjoy the arts. And I think that through music discovery, we can become more engaged, increase the amount of time we spend listening to music because there's more out there that we like.
Well, it's a new technology day and quite something to marinate in. Daniel Levitin, author of The World in Six Songs, and this is Your Brain on Music. It's always great to talk with you. Thank you very much for being here today.
Nice to be here.
And Tim Westergren, I hope you keep those ads to a minimum. You know, what's not having so many is part of what makes you different. Can you do that?
Yeah, well, I think no one will ever find it quite to be too heavy a load.
Okay, we'll pray for that as you guys move forward. And right across this whole front with Slacker and Flycast and iTunes Genius, Tim Westergren founded Pandora, and it's a lot of fun. We hope we've introduced you to something interesting today on the musical front. Tim, good luck to you there in San Francisco, and thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Download our podcast as well. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.